Taylor, can you call the next item?
Item 747, direct the Portland Housing Bureau to adopt medium income and maximum monthly rent guidelines.
Okay.
Welcome Hello. Back.
Thank you. For the record, Matthew Schaubold with the Housing Bureau. So this is the first of really a number of what have traditionally been administrative policies that will be coming to council to officially adopt them as Portland policy documents to formalize some administrative policies. And the impetus for this is coming from a few places, in part upon guidance from the city attorney's office, given the Bureau's new role in some mandatory programs for affordability, mandatory inclusionary housing being one, potential further programs around renter-owner services or renter-owner regulatory requirements. And then separate from that, there have been some audits, both at the federal and local level, that have provided guidance that it would be good for the Bureau to formalize its administrative policies as official city policies. And so this is the first one, which is our area median income and maximum rent guidelines. And given that we're moving this as a policy document, pardon me, I wanted to give just a little bit of a primer for folks that were unfamiliar with the terminology or unfamiliar with the guidelines themselves. So this policy does essentially two things. And one is to set the maximum household income for eligibility for programs, city Housing Bureau programs. So as we just talked about with the HOLTI program, that's a 100% of the area median income, but we have programs both on the rental side and the homeownership side, as well as home repair for households at 30% AMI, 50% AMI, 60% AMI, so throughout the income threshold. And this policy formalizes the table. You'll see in the policy document, there's a grid of median incomes by household size, and that is what determines eligibility for our programs. And then the second thing that it does is it establishes for the rental portfolio what the maximum rents are that can be charged in the unit based on the AMI that they're regulated at. So if they're regulated at a 30% AMI level or an 80% AMI level, it then imputes what the maximum rents would be for our various rental housing programs. So AMI is it's a calculation, it's a metropolitan area figure. It is actually calculated by HUD. It uses Census Bureau data from the American Community Survey, and it's a methodology that combines both five-year estimates as well as one-year data with some attempts by the federal government to incorporate an inflation factor given the time lag of the data. And every year, this is published by HUD for every metropolitan statistical area in the country. This year it was a little bit late, but it has been published, and then the Bureau provides notice to all of the providers of regulated housing that they have to adjust not only their eligibility for the units, but the rents that are in the units themselves. Just a little bit more detail, area median income, it is the midpoint, so it is the median income in the city at which more than half the households will make more and half the households will earn less. Again, it can be a little bit complicated because it does vary based on household size, and there is some there are some methodological elements that the Department of Housing and Urban Development incorporates to try and address outliers, particularly for rather large households. But again, it's calculated every year, and it's what establishes our program eligibility throughout the city. Just a quick note, because I think council is probably hearing the term area median income as well as median family income, and the two are really synonymous. The median family income has been a local term that the city of Portland has used for quite some time, and some other jurisdictions in Oregon. Area median income is kind of the national standard, and so the Bureau is slowly changing the terminology to align with the national standard of area median income. It's more of a process than one would expect, though, given the volume of code and policy and regulatory documents that need to be modified. So it's a slow transition over time, but we're moving toward the use of the term area median income. And then as far as the maximum rent schedule, you also find in the policy document a maximum rent schedule. And the maximum rent schedule is it's an imputed 30% of cost given a particular income in the AMI grid. So, and it is inclusive of a utility allowance. So you will see our utility allowance policy coming before you to formalize that from an administrative policy to a Portland policy document. But again, so if you're looking at this chart here and the maximum rent allowable in a 60% unit for with two bedrooms being $1,009 per month, the provider of that regulated unit would have to lower the rent in order to allow for a utility allowance. So the rent that the household is actually paying plus a utility allowance cannot exceed $1,009 per month. So that's how the rent works. And again, it's a simple calculation. We use the national standard, which is 30% of the income within the AMI table for a given AMI column and household size.
Matthew, I have a question. And by the way, I wish this is an area where I think we all wish we weren't bound by the jargon of housing, because it does not invite people in. It's you use these kinds of acronyms, people's eyes glaze over. And I wish we had a different language, but every bureau deals with this.
Yeah.
The question I have is in updating these charts and maximum rents and allowable income, are we also simultaneously with developments like the Ellington that were purchased with bond money working to ensure that people whose income goes above the guidelines are grandfathered so they're not evicted? I think it would be very odd if the city's in the business of acquiring properties to preserve affordable housing then displacing people. So can you give us an update on that?
Sure. So that's another policy that you'll see in the months to come. The Bureau has an administrative policy called Incomes Rising in Place. And the essence of it is we don't want to kick people out who happen to move in at a dollar amount and then they make $1 more. And so depending on the source of funds, whether it's federal funds or local funds, and depending on, or potentially mandatory inclusionary housing units or tax credits, there's a different income rising in place policy. But in general, the Bureau tries to allow an income to rise in place to either the next threshold of an AMI category. So if they're in a 30% unit, there'll be a rising in place policy to a 50 or a 60% AMI level, or potentially an 80%, depending on the source. But we will certainly be giving a full detailed presentation on that policy and all of the different nuances given the funding source.
Yeah, and just previewing my concern on this, I'm talking specifically about properties that we acquire with
Correct.
Our resources. To me, there's a difference between someone who is renting without subsidy, mm-hmm. who may no longer be eligible, and someone who is renting in that development subject to some subsidy program, federal, state, local, whatever. And I would hope that those particular individuals are red-circled and that we look very closely at ensuring that they're not at risk of eviction.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
I just want to make sure I understand. For the median income guidelines, what is the criteria? That's a HUD.
Mm-hmm.
Those are HUD numbers.
Correct.
But for the maximum rent, monthly rent guidelines,
mm-hmm.
is that also HUD, or we're using our own?
I mean, it's HUD, but we impute that by just applying a 30% factor
yeah.
to the income over the monthly income over a year.
Yeah.
So.
I think we were struggling a little bit looking at the monthly rent schedule, but because some of these will be privately owned homes or units that were subsidizing the renter,
That's
right?
Correct.
It's just striking that balance between not encouraging landlords to charge this maximum amount that they can get because we've set it,
mm-hmm.
and not making it almost impossible for renters to find housing in that range. So Any thoughts on that?
You know, as far as our providers, I think you'll find that they each operate differently based on, I guess, their organizational values and mission and just their own financial books, I suppose. And some of our providers don't always reach the cap. And perhaps they've got a 60% unit, 60% regulated one-bedroom unit, and they don't reach the $784 because they've had someone in there for 5 or 10 years, and that person has been paying $625 maybe. And they try and balance that with, from a mission standpoint, with their ability to get enough cash flow to operate the building.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, I would anticipate that under the Mandatory Inclusionary Housing Program, given that that's a mandate through the zoning code, that the providers of those regulated units would be right up at the cap.
Yeah.
So in general, I think the guidance I would offer council is, to the extent that for a particular program, there is a desire to encourage a deeper level of affordability, I would recommend not changing the rent calculation, but modifying the program to have a lower AMI threshold for eligibility. That's probably a more administratively, I'll say administratively less burdensome way to get at a deeper level of affordability, rather than having different calculations, because we would have to administer different rent calculations.
Sure.
Internally.
Thanks. That's really helpful. Just wanting to understand what this actually looks like in the real world.
Yes.
Off the page. Thank you.
Thanks. So I just have some questions about the Exhibit A, number 6, the amendments to policy.
Yes.
And it says the director of the Portland Housing Bureau or designee shall have authority to make changes to this Portland policy document as is necessary to meet current program requirements throughout the year. How often does the calculation of area medium income come out?
Once per year.
Once a year. And when is that?
Usually it's around February or March. It was a little bit later this year, we think, because of the transition at the federal level. This year it was around April, and then we provided notice in May.
And so when it comes out, that's you do that. And then the second part of that says this policy will be reviewed annually. Mm-hmm. Will the adjustments come back to council annually?
We can certainly present on them, given the language. The intent was to run a process similar to an administrative rulemaking process. If you recall, a few months ago, we had presented the Bureau adopting a formal administrative rulemaking process in order to notify the public that there would be a change.
So I think there's benefit in bringing it to council. You know, the questions of my colleagues who know far much more about this than I do presumably are also reflecting interest in the community. So do we need to add that to the policy or to the resolution, ordinance, sorry, to say that a report would come to council every year?
Sure, I think that would be appropriate.
But as I say, you colleagues who know more about this, does the affirmation of the number need to come back or just a report about it?
You know, I don't know the answer. To me, this feels a little bit like if it ain't broke, why fix it? Because we've been doing this on a regular basis, setting these numbers, and there's a lot of community oversight. I would say get the level of reporting you want, but I want to be clear about what the benefit is.
Yeah, because the number's the number, whatever it says, right?
Correct.
So there's no discretion in that.
Correct. And, you know, we can, in the State of Housing Report, we do publish some of the AMI figures, but we can add something that publishes the full schedule each year.
Yeah.
So that the readers of that report on an annual basis can see what both the maximum income.
I think that would be, Commissioner Fritz, that would be a great, and that report keeps getting more comprehensive. So I would say adding that to the report and also ensuring that the PHAC, the oversight body of the Housing Bureau, reviews these numbers annually, I think would be an addition.
Yeah, so if you could make sure that is included in the presentation on the housing report.
Sure thing.
To council, because I don't routinely check the Housing Bureau's website on a daily basis and would appreciate, just as I say, having it open for the public who also may or may not go to that website. So thank you.
Absolutely.
All right. Carla, is there any public testimony?
Nope, no one signed up.
And
it's a non-emergency.
All right. So the non-emergency gets moved to a second reading.
Oh, by the way, congratulations to Shannon Callahan. I'm sorry, Dan's not here, but there's been an announcement that she'll be leaving Dan's office and joining the Housing Bureau as a deputy director, mm-hmm. a co-deputy director.
Yes.
And with a primary responsibility in implementing and overseeing the housing bond. Mm-hmm. As a former housing commissioner who worked very closely with Dan's office when he had the Bureau, I just want to call out Shannon's superb work on behalf of the city. Very detail focused, very creative in her thinking, and highly regarded in the community. I know this is a big loss for Dan's office, and his chief of staff actually said that, but I think it's a big win for the Bureau. Mm-hmm. And she'll now be in a position where she can, I think, even have a bigger impact. So I think that's a terrific addition.
I agree.
Thank you.
Thank you.